Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to the 203rd edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at SoccerNewsDay.com. And, of course, we're going to start off the show right off the bat. Whatever's going to happen in my intro monologue, I'm going to push it back. We are going to have on Stephen Leonard over in Portland to discuss the All-Star game, that big-time win for MLS as a whole against the top club in Germany, of course, Bayern Munich. But before we get to that, of course, waiting to have on Mr. Adam Serrano from the LA Galaxy Insider. As, of course, everyone knows what happened this past Thursday, Landon Donovan has announced his retirement, not just from international soccer, but also soccer altogether. It is very, very tough and very, very interesting to see, and it's a little bit sad, to be honest. When you have a guy like a Landon Donovan, who at the age of 32 has decided to hang it all up at the age of 32. Very, very strange to see some of that happening. And as we try to decipher all this in what's going on and all that stuff, that we talk about a player who has been very important in the history of American soccer, not just on a club level, but on a national team level, did certain things
full happen, and cannot accept new.
Did certain things happen that made Landon Donovan change his mind and to end his career? Obviously, we all know about what he did not do, and that is, of course, being taken off the roster not going to his fourth World Cup in his career. And maybe did that lead to it, or was it the sabbatical that he decided that just not anymore. No more. I'm done with playing professional soccer. And hopefully we will have on Adam Serrano to talk about this tonight as we try to wonder why Landon Donovan decided to call it quits. You know, all I can say is about Landon Donovan is playing in MLS as well as for the national team, nothing says it more when you have a guy with the ability that he has. And let's be honest, he is at this present time the best produced American player we have ever seen. Some will say maybe Eric Winalda, which let's not throw him under the bus, obviously, because Eric Winalda probably in his time, I only saw glimpses of it in 1994 and 1998 during those World Cups, obviously, here in the U.S. and in France in 98 to see him perform as much as he could. But the point, though, is that to see what Landon Donovan did, to see him during qualifying, to see him in these World Cups, to see him especially in 2002, where the USA started to make their mark, that was the announcement of our national team being on the world stage. That is our national team being on the world stage, announcing to everyone on the planet, we are here. Nothing will make me more happy remembering that wonderful moment of Landon Donovan running down the near side, Eddie Lewis on the far side with the ball, attacking Mexico, attacking their net, already up 1-0, and a beautiful looping cross right at the feet of Landon Donovan, right at him. And he pounds it past the keeper to make it 2-0 USA. That was the beginning of this great moment. There was also another great moment, of course, the 3-2 victory over Portugal in that same World Cup. The second goal that was scored by the U.S., which was then changed to an own goal on Portugal, even though Landon Donovan, I don't believe he was trying to shoot it. I think he was trying to cross it, and the ball deflected off the shoulder of the defender, and it just curled inside the far post and in. Landon Donovan caused that ball, with the help of the defender, to cross inside the far post and made it 2-0 at that time for the United States. Other great World Cup moments, of course, in 2010. The Thunder goal, point blank, roof shot, being down 2-0, and then making it 2-1 Slovenia, as Landon Donovan went and avoided his defender, went right inside the six-yard box, and he roofs it inside the net. Just unbelievable scenes that we saw. Waiting for Adam Serrano, the LA Galaxy inside, to come on in and discuss Landon Donovan, of course. And, of course, we can never forget the game against Algeria in the last group stage game. Of course, the big play was not just the great distribution by Tim Howard. Ball to Landon Donovan, who found Clint Dempsey all alone, even though it was a save made by the Algerian keeper. Landon Donovan trailed the play, got behind it, and scored the biggest goal for the USA in that World Cup.
2-1-3.
Unfortunately, it looks like we're not going to get Adam Serrano on, and hopefully we'll get him back a little later in the show if we can. But definitely, you have to say that goal also cemented his career as probably one of the best American players of our time right now. There are some negatives, I believe, on Landon. We're not going to harp on them today. Next week, we'll have a special show talking about Landon Donovan. Next week, we'll have on Dave Denholm. Of course, you know him from Fox Sports 1 covering soccer during UEFA Champions League and UEFA Europa League matches, and also Dave Denholm with his 3-4 Win podcast. We'll also have on Michael Lewis of Big Apple Soccer Newsday talking about Landon Donovan and his national team career, and then, of course, Carter Kirschneier will be joining us to discuss Landon Donovan as a whole, because the truth is that there are certain things that need to be discussed about this. There are certain things about Landon Donovan where some will say potential wasn't reached all the way there. But at the same time, we cannot dismiss the fact that Landon Donovan did put on the American flag around his neck for a cape, and he tried to show his muscle on the field, taking on all opponents if possible. And every single time the United States faced Mexico, in World Cup qualifying, of course, several Gold Cup finals, and that World Cup round of 16 in 2002 in South Korea, Landon Donovan is definitely one of the most feared and respected players from within the Confederation of CONCACAF. There will be other players during his generation for the national team, like a DeMarcus Beasley, obviously. But I think we can definitely say that Landon Donovan will always be the best produced American attacker that this country's ever had. Obviously, he's made several trips to Europe to play for originally signed by Bayer Leverkusen, unfortunately did not use him. There was a stint with a loan at Bayern Munich, and of course that didn't go well. The two trips to Everton, and of course we'll probably talk to Tim Cahill about Landon Donovan a little bit later if possible, in a couple of weeks or so, but it's probably already been said what needs to be said. Obviously Tim Cahill was with Landon when Cahill was with Everton when Landon Donovan was on loan. But I really believe that we have seen the best of him. And I think at times we might have seen the worst of him. There have been times in MLS where he just did not show any form of sportsmanship. But outside of that, Landon Donovan will always be considered the best. I, of course, have said many, many times that Landon Donovan is needed for the national team. And I'll be truthful about it myself. I did not like the sabbatical he took. I thought that sabbatical, whether he deserved it or not, he should never have taken more than 2 months off. When your season is over, you've won your MLS Cup championship, you know you're not going to the friendlies at the end of the year, what you should have done was just take 2 months off, don't go anywhere, just stay in bed, stay home, sleep, relax, and just, you know, let yourself enjoy the much-needed rest that you deserved. I am, unfortunately, one of those that felt that sabbatical was the wrong thing to do. But, you know, regardless of that, regardless of how long he took the sabbatical, at least I can recognize that Landon Donovan deserved whatever plaudits he got. Whether or not there's going to be some negative chirping going on, that's not for me to decide. That's for some of you to decide. But if we can really say this right now, as the 2014 MLS season is slowly about to finish off its regular season and head into the playoffs, I can definitely say this. I can definitely say that Landon Donovan, the era of Landon Donovan, not just in club soccer, but for the national team, it has officially ended. It's all over. At the age of 32 years old, Landon Donovan has retired from the game as a whole. It's still a little shocking. It's still a little tough to swallow. But you know what? I think whatever Landon wants to do, and hopefully it's something positive, Landon Donovan, I wish you the best of luck in your future. I wish you the best of luck in what you want to do with the rest of your life. If you feel like you're done with the game, go right ahead, take it easy, and let's not worry about it anymore. We'll see what the Galaxy will do the rest of the way this season. But definitely, we're going to see what the situation will be as Landon Donovan calls it a career. Thank you, Landon, for the moments, the memories. Thank you so much for coming on, doing what you've done for the game in this country. Thank you so much for it, and I really hope you enjoy your retirement. Well, everyone, what happened last Wednesday, of course, the MLS All-Star Game, it was rocking in Portland, Oregon, at Providence Park, all over the town. So many wonderful moments, so many wonderful events. Talking about it is my good friend Stephen Lenhart from the 5 Minutes to Kickoff podcast. Steve, how's it going? And boy, oh boy, that was some couple of days in Portland, huh?
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's going good. Doing a little recovery from that. A lot of VIP parties and schmoozing around town, meeting Henri and everything, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Seeing the best of the best of the league. Very, very interesting things going on. Of course, look, I'll be honest with you. You know, you go on Twitter, you like to joke around a little bit. You like to say all these things like, yeah, Bayern Munich, they're going to put 5 past us in 5 minutes. It's going to be over in 5 minutes. It's going to be one and done, and then we'll just head on back to our league lives. And then all of a sudden, it's like the defense found a way to just prevent those 4 goals.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I was kind of skeptical going into it as far as, how the team, the all-star team, supposed to be representing MLS would do with only two days practice and, you know, going up against a force that is Bayern Munich. It turned into some great activities around town. So that was, I was getting in the spirit of things as we went. But then, going to the game, it was, that first goal went in for Bayern Munich, and I was like, uh-oh. But it turned out to be pretty competitive and a pretty good little showcase, of what the league has to offer. And that wasn't even the best of the best from MLS either. So it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. And I think the overall experience was pretty good. They put on a – Merritt did a pretty good job with, if they're going to have an all-star game, you may as well go big with it. And that's kind of what they did.
Oh, absolutely. I thought the Timbers did a fantastic job running the all-star game. I thought all those great events you had the night before, 2 days before, were fantastic, obviously. There were a couple of bands over there. What was the entertainment like before the game, a day before? I know the Men in Blazers guys had their little outdoor fun and games with Timber Joey and Tim Cahill and Alex Morgan. I mean, that was probably a fun time as well.
Yeah, it was. They actually had the first event start on that previous Friday. Is mm-hmm. when they opened it up. The Pioneer Square down in Portland it was kind of a central area. It's walking distance to the stadium. The Nines Hotel that the teams are staying in was right across the street. So it's a central area. The train goes right by it and everything. And they just kind of set up a whole, soccer festivity thing there. And, they had a turf field in there where they were having games going, pickup games. They had interactive things going on, and then they had some concerts. They had the Flaming Lips show, and they had other small little art shows going on that were coinciding with MLS. And so, everything was accessible and free. And it was also nice because there was a lot of people that came from out of town. So, that a lot of people were coming to Portland to watch the All-Stars or, a lot of Bayern Munich fans that were kind of got attracted to the town and kind of like how we were celebrating soccer. So that was pretty cool to see.
Yeah, it's really, really cool to see. And just a lot of fun things going on and just a great, great game as well. And what'd you think about Bradley Wright Phillips' goal? I mean, he's the current leader for the Golden Boot with 18 goals so far. How'd you like that little rocket of a shot?
Oh, it was nice, and it was quite a nice shot. And I'm actually kind of disappointed in myself because a couple days before that, I went over to the Nines Hotel, and I'm sitting down there, and I look up, and Bradley White Phillips and Tim Cahill and Henri were sitting on the couch there. And if I would have known what Bradley White Phillips was going to do in that game, I probably should have schmoozed with him a little bit more. But no, it was a great struck ball, you know, and it was nice because it, you know, it brought the team back into it, and you know, it turned into a good game. And so that was, I guess, all that we were all, you know, wondering how it was going to turn out, you know. And I think overall people were pretty happy with how it turned out. But, so I don't know. I'm assuming that you got to watch it on TV and everything.
Yes, I did. I did watch it on TV. Now, obviously, the Osvaldo Alonso challenge, I believe, was on Schweinsteiger. That did not make Pep Guardiola happy. Obviously, he ran. I don't know, he didn't run, but he went towards Porter, and obviously he's yelling at him, like, why are you telling him to tackle my guy like that? And Porter's like, I didn't do anything.
Right. And I guess that's kind of what ends up being the kind of the nature of the game, you know. It's like, you know, you don't know where both these teams kind of stand on, like, what kind of intensity and they're going to bring to the game. And maybe that was kind of an indication of how Pep Guardiola felt about the game too. So, yeah, that was kind of interesting. But he took the same vein that Bruce Arena did the first time that the Timbers played against Caleb Porter's team, you know, against the LA Galaxy, against the Portland Timbers, when Timbers beat them, and Bruce Arena didn't shake Porter's hand after the match either. So
yeah,
he's got a
string exactly.
of coaches that he looks up to that did that the first time. So
I know, it's like Caleb's trying to shake his hand. He's going after him like a lost puppy with sad dog eyes. You know, like, shake my hand, Pep. Shake my hand. I just want to shake your hand. And Pep's like, nope.
Yeah. Daniel, I was gonna break some cool news to you on air here.
Go ahead. Go for it.
Yeah. So you know, the Timbers have their match coming up on Saturday at New England, and so I'm going out to that one. And I'm actually I'm going out there with a writer. I'm recovering it. I'm gonna do, shoot some photography for it and do some writing. And but the bonus is that I'm traveling down with the team to Guyana for the Champions League match a couple days later.
There you go. Look at that. The Champions League match. That's going to be a big one against, I think, Alpha United you're facing in your group.
Yep. You're exactly right. Down in Georgetown, Guyana. Match is on Wednesday. So, I'm traveling down there and going to be doing some photography for that and doing some I have a writer that we're going with, too. So should be quite the experience, I'd have to say.
Definitely. Would love to have your experience on that next week, obviously, when we do our round two review show of the CONCACAF Champions League next Friday. Definitely would love to have you. You're going to be on there anyway, and would love to hear about the discussions of every single Timbers fan that goes south of Mexico, a little bit east. I think I keep forgetting where Guyana is. I know it's in the Caribbean, but I don't know if that's one of the countries
actually,
that's a part of South America.
Right, it's actually in South America. It's surrounded by Venezuela and Brazil. So, but they play in the CONCACAF region. So, yeah, I have no idea what to expect. I just know that they play in the national stadium, which is a cricket stadium. It's about maybe 16,000, 14,000 or so, and it was built for the Cricket World Cup, so there's some historic stuff just on that side of things. But it should be interesting. I have no idea what to expect. Don't know much about the team, but it should be a historic moment for the Portland Timbers.
Oh, absolutely. There it is. I see it right now. It is Guyana. It is east of Venezuela with Suriname, French Guyana, and some other sections of Brazil. So you're technically, you'll be between Venezuela and Brazil. That's not so bad.
Yep. Yeah. So we'll see what happens there. And I guess they speak English. It's a British colony. So Yes, it's going to be a learning experience for everybody involved.
It really will be, and I would really love to hear what's going to happen over there, and hopefully you'll have a lot of fun times. A couple of national parks. I'm looking here right now on Google Maps to see how the area is, and you know, obviously it's in the it's a port city, Georgetown, correct?
Yep, Georgetown is where we're going to be, yep.
All right, that looks like you have a lot of fun down there. Are you going to bring some of that special Portland beer to exchange with the natives so you can have a couple of taste tests?
I haven't thought that far ahead.
I just
want to make it down there in one piece. That's
that's the idea. Yeah, that's the idea. Just get down there in one piece. It sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. It sounds like you're going to have some fun times down there. Hopefully, we don't know how strong Alpha United is down in Guyana, so we'll see what happens there. But still, I think you should have a fun time down there. I mean, I've never been there myself, so I really can't say I've been down there. The closest I've been to in that vicinity, including the Caribbean islands, has been to the Bahamas. So I've been to Bahamas once, and that's a nice place to be. I was with my wife on our honeymoon. But so you got yourself a nice little trip to Alpha United in Guyana, and then you're going to head back up to the Northeast to take on the New England Revolution. You'll be on the road with a bunch of Portland fanatics, and it sounds like it's going to be a great time. Outside of everything that happened at the All-Star game, and obviously the goals were great, what's your opinion, if I can ask? I know that the Timbers face the Galaxy sometimes twice a year, three times a year with the new scheduling format. What's your opinion about Landon Donovan retiring from the game entirely?
Wow, yeah, I guess that's a pretty tough one because as far as, you know, Landon Donovan, I mean, like, I guess my greatest memory is always going to be that World Cup goal, you know, just the classic moment to advance the U.S. national team. So, you know, as far as that goes, that's my lasting memory. But, you know, with this last round of World Cup where he wasn't you know, called upon to actually go to the World Cup, and there was a little bit of controversy with that. You know, I think this just kind of shows where his mind was anyway, you know, coming into that World Cup. You know, he's now, you know, announced his retirement, and, you know, he just doesn't seem like he's been playing quite at the level that he needs to be, at least game in, game out. I mean, obviously, he can turn it on for games, and, you know, I guess that's the one, if you were to say one, you know, one knock against Donovan is that sometimes you kind of wondered where his mind was. But then, you know, he also did so many great things for the U.S. national team. So it's one of those things, you know. And, you know, he was kind of the first guy, you know, of the new generation that came through and rose to a nice level and everything. And now, you know, he's already inspired a whole new generation, and there's going to be better players that come along because of him, you know, kind of thing. So that's kind of my thing.
All right. Well, listen, Stephen, thank you very much for the time. I appreciate it. Good luck and safe trip down to Guyana, and, of course, safe trip coming back up to the States, to the Northeast.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank
right.
you. Stephen.
Cheers.
All right. Cheers. Stephen Leonard Cheers. From the 5 Minutes to Kickoff podcast. Talking about the All-Star game, great moments, great fun, great stuff going on over there. Just a lot of awesome moments for everyone that supports Major League Soccer, watching that All-Star game. Of course, we all know the finger wagging by Pep Guardiola as to why he was upset with certain challenges, even though apparently Bayern Munich decided to arrive on that day by plane several hours at noontime Pacific before the game got underway, which I think that's a bad thing to do, but what are you going to do? There's nothing you can do about it. And all you can do is just find a way to try and prove certain teams wrong that you shouldn't have done that. Well, they did it anyway. Guardiola did not like it. He said that he would like a rematch with the MLS All-Stars, maybe because they felt they didn't take it seriously. And if they didn't want to take it seriously, that's fine. It's okay, because let's be honest, it's an all-star game, but unfortunately, you know, MLS players are in their in form in their season, in the middle of the season, so it's just one of those things that you have to say that you feel bad, but they knew what they're getting themselves into. And if you didn't like it, then you shouldn't have played the game. That's what Alexi Lalas said, and I do agree with him. So that is that on the subject of the All-Star game, and now we're going to move on. And like I said before, originally we were supposed to have Adam Serrano on at 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific to talk about Landon Donovan. Apparently something came up, and he was not able to call in, so that's okay. If he does call in, we'll try to get him on. If not, it's not a big deal. We'll worry about that because obviously probably something has come up and he couldn't get out of it. So as we move forward here, I want to talk about what happened on a certain show called Real Sports with Brian Gumbel. Of course, that's on HBO, their HBO sports department. And Brian Gumbel always does a fantastic job with his Real Sports show talking about the different subjects of all the sports going on. And, of course, we are talking about Qatar or Qatar, however you want to pronounce the country. And to discuss, of course, that World Cup bidding process with FIFA is where I would like to once again bring this topic back up again, because we need to have the understanding that Qatar bribing, and even though some are saying, well, it's not proven, but let's be honest, Qatar has been doing some underhanded things that even I didn't know about. A very wealthy country throwing out money all over the place. It's like they've got plenty of cash to spend. And you're talking about, when you talk about these clubs that have the, you know, the money to just drop from a bucket, it's just a drop of the bucket. For them, it's nothing. They got plenty more money to spend. And you're talking about a country that you think did not win the bidding of this World Cup fair and square. Because why? Because they had more money than they know what to do with. And watching this article, watching this piece on HBO Sports, and I'll be honest, I watched it on the on-demand because I missed it and I didn't know when it was on, but I caught it on the on-demand on my cable box. And let me just say right now, it's not just the human rights violations that appalls me when they bring these people from these poorer countries in Asia and Africa to force them to work and to continue to work when they don't need them anymore, either when their so-called term is over or if they just drop dead in the blistering, stifling heat. Because the truth is, they don't care. They're rich. They're powerful. They're just one huge country. It's amazing to see the athletes they produce, because the truth of the matter is they don't have athletes to produce. They have no athletes representing their country that were born there. They take the athletes from other countries, pay them off, give them brand new identities, brand new passports. I mean, you look at the Olympics, the weightlifting team, the big barbells that the weightlifters have to pull, you know, jerk it over their heads. And if you have the on-demand from HBO Sports, you go ahead and watch everything that happens with your on-demand coverage from either your satellite dish or your cable box or on the computer. And all you have to do is, you know, HBO, click that, go to HBO Sports, hit that, go to Real Sports, hit that, And then you go all the way down to RS, meaning Real Sports, Qatar Scandal. Go ahead and watch it. Go ahead and see what I'm talking about, because this is a real sign of disrespect to the global community, and a real disrespect to those of us that are trying to earn an honest dollar, especially these people where they are trying to send money to their families so they can eat. They can send their kids to school so they can at least have some form of a life instead of struggling all the time. Qatar, a country that has basically been brought in by a bunch of sheiks, probably building it up into something that we don't even know what the heck they are. And how they won the right to host the 2022 World Cup. Now, once again, let me say this. I am not against any Arab country that wants to host the World Cup. I'm not against them to hosting a World Cup. But we already know how the temperatures can be in the summertime. It's really simple. If an Arab country wants to host a World Cup, they're going to have to build retractable roof stadiums. They're going to have to build retractable roof stadiums, not only to make sure that the grass grows properly. I mean, they might have to come to Glendale, Arizona, to where the Arizona Cardinals play in the National Football League, because that field gets lowered below the ground, rolled outside, all in one mechanical push of a button, and that's how the field can the necessary sunlight so it can grow properly. You don't see that from Qatar. Oh, no. What we'll do is open-air, air-conditioned stadiums. That's not going to happen. A giant remote control propeller and a remote-controlled mechanical cloud cover for 2 hours. That's not going to happen either, because let's just say, what happens if, I don't know, the propellers stopped working? I mean, I would have to assume half of it would be dipping into the stadium, crashing into the field, killing fans, possibly killing the footballers if a mechanical failure happens. How is it possible that that nation has enough room to build more than just, forget about even 12 stadiums for a World Cup, 2 or 3 stadiums from a World Cup, and all outdoors? Do we know now why FIFA wants to make that World Cup in the winter months, basically interrupting England's season and every other league season, with the exception of, well, when does Germany and France and Spain, Italy, they take that 2-week break from their league season for the winter break? When does that happen? Because if that's when they're going to put the World Cup for the group stages, I guess so. But still, how did Qatar get this World Cup bid? Bribing FIFA. The woman that FIFA hired to prevent the corruption, or to explore the so-called corruption that they said, you know, she barely got anything going because they just got underway. And FIFA, out of the blue, comes out and says, we are no longer corrupt. Oh, that's not so. That is so not so. So, right there and then, all I can say is that Qatar, right now, are the biggest financial thieves in the world. And it's not just because they bribed to get this World Cup. The human rights element here, keeping these men from these poor countries in Asia, keeping them from their families, forcing them to do work, forcing them to do things they don't get properly paid for. They don't have the proper facilities to clean themselves when they're sweating like banana, you know, they're sweating bullets all day long. And of course, going back home in a coffin, going back home in a coffin, dead, back to their families because they're not considered to be useful anymore because they died. Why? Because they did. And it's terrible. And it's a shame. And you've heard these stories before, but when you talk about with real sports from H, here's something I bet you didn't hear that I need to explain here. This father sent his 16-year-old son to Qatar to get a job, to help provide for the family. A 16-year-old working in a construction site, working, cleaning the streets, working whatever it is. I don't know what happened, what he was doing. But in that report, a 16-year-old died. A 16-year-old boy died, and Qatar sent his body back in a coffin to his father. As great as it is to host a World Cup, as great as it is to have the feeling of going to that country to celebrate the game, 32 teams, including the host nation, what are we saying here? Where are the protests of what Qatar has been doing? I don't see protests from within the United States or from within Canada talking about Qatar with its, let's be honest, their human slavery, because they have the money to do whatever they want. They could change all of this, as they say, with a drop of a bucket, because they have the money. I am trying not to persecute a country for what they've done, but for what Qatar has done, to be honest. To me, it feels like in the sporting world, yes, they want to host the World Cup. They want the World Cup. They want it to be their best thing that they've ever done. They have no real athletes. Anyone that's born in that country is not a Qatarian footballer, soccer player. They take them from different parts of the world and tell them, we'll pay you to be a Qatarian soccer player and represent the Qatari national team. Here is your new passport. Here is your new name. You're no longer John Williams. You are now whatever name they pick to give you. It's a shame. And let's be honest, what about the rules that FIFA puts down about changing your national team? That you have to put in a piece of paper to say, you're no longer going to play for Germany, you're going to play for the United States. Or you're no longer a player that's going to play for England, you're going to play for Canada now because you have some Canadian blood in you, you have some American blood, and you can change your national teams and be on that national team. What are you going to do then? What about all of this? Isn't there supposed to be a length of time to say, okay, we are processing the request? What happens if Qatar goes through that, but they're not going to wait? They're just going to say, you're automatically a Qatarian. We don't care what FIFA says. We've already, they already have the World Cup. You know, we already have the World Cup. FIFA has nothing to say. And that's the danger right now in world soccer, my friends. That's the true danger right now. Like I said before, I don't mind seeing a world tournament being played in one of the Arab countries in the Middle East. What I do care about is how it gets earned. If Saudi Arabia wants it, if Iran wants it, Iraq wants it, they're going to have to build stadiums with a retractable roof. Get that done first, and then get the World Cup. We are 8 years away from 2022. Russia is already set to go. The real question right now is, what will Qatar do? Because if it's only one stadium, that's not enough. If FIFA does the right thing, FIFA rejects Qatar and just has a re-vote with South Korea, Australia, and the United States, and anyone else that was part of that bidding process for 2022. No extra cash, no more financial booklets that are probably 2-3 dictionaries thick. Just have a straight rebid, bring in some new executive committee members, and revote. Because that's the fair thing to do, FIFA. Truly, fair play. So that's what it is. And that's how I feel about the situation. But other than that, there you go. And now it's time for the NESL segment, ladies and gentlemen, as we go ahead and take a look at the results from the past week here in the North American Soccer League's fall season. Very interesting what happened on Wednesday, August the 6th. We have two matches that ended in scoreless draws. The Cosmos drawing 0-0 with FC Edmonton on Long Island, and the Indy 11 drawing 0-0 at home against the Fort Lauderdale Strikers at Michael A. Carroll Stadium. We go straight over as the Fort Lauderdale Strikers host the Ottawa Fury by a final of 2-1. Sorry about that. I just lost my place there for a minute there. Ottawa Fury losing at TD Bank Place. TD Bank Place. 10th minute, Hallworth puts Ottawa ahead. 6 minutes later, it's Picault to level the score. But Derek King makes it 2-1 Fort Lauderdale in the 76th minute. And Fort Lauderdale gets the big win. Final score, Ottawa Fury 1, Fort Lauderdale Strikers 2. Something about Atlanta just makes the New York Cosmos go back on the winning streak. It was an early goal by Burgos in the 12th minute. And then in the 45th. Flores makes it 1-1. And then in the second half, Marco Senna, coming back from his injury, makes it 2-1 on a fabulous free kick. And the Cosmos defeat the Silverbacks by a final of 2-1. Final score, Atlanta Silverbacks 1, New York Cosmos 2. And as we keep on moving here on the NASL segment, for the fall season, big, big game between the Railhawks and the Rowdies. Unbelievable stuff going on. It was the Railhawks hosting Tampa Bay. Big, big game here. Walker gets the first goal of the match in the third minute. And Kandawari makes it 2-0 Tampa Bay in the 10th minute. And as we continue to look here, it looks like there's some error here. I don't know what happened, if someone else got two goals or not, or maybe there's a third goal we're missing. We're missing here something here. I'm just taking a look here at the NHL. Take a look here, lineups. Let's see here what happened. Well, if it says 4-3, it says 4-3, but I see two goals from Tampa. So, I mean, from Carolina, we'll say it's see if there's an error here, if we can find it. I hope there's not an error. Well, that means all I can say is there's a phantom goal somewhere. I just can't find it, but that's okay. We'll assume Shalovsky got a brace in this one. And Martinez, 51st minute, made it 3-2 for Carolina. And then Lucky Mikosana made it 3-3 for Tampa. And then Russell in the 84th minute makes it 4-3 Tampa. So there you have it. Final score, Tampa Bay Rowdies defeat Carolina 4-3. So final score, Carolina Railhawks 3, Tampa Bay Rowdies 4. And as we continue on here, of course, I have fans in the chat room talking to me, wondering about my opinions about what happened in Qatar. As I'm saying, Simulize a member of FIFA Executive Committee. So there you have it. Minnesota United defeating FC Edmonton by a final of 3-2. It was a fourth-minute goal by Lang to give Edmonton a 1-0 lead, and then Ramirez gets an equalizer in the 15th minute to make it 1-1. Second half, Daniel Mendez with a brace in the 48th and 59th minute, and then Neil Hlavatý pulled one back to make it 3-2 Minnesota, but that would be the end of it. In the 81st minute, final score, Minnesota United FC 3, FC Edmonton 2. And then finally, you have the San Antonio Scorpions hosting and defeating the Indy 11 by a final of 2-0 at Toyota Field. Zahorski with the first goal of the match in the 28th minute, and then James with the second goal in the 38th minute. And that would be the end of that. And your final score, once again, San Antonio 2, the Scorpions 2, Indy 11-0. And now we go ahead and take a look at the standings for the fall season. San Antonio Scorpions still leading the fall season with 5 wins and a loss for 15 points with a +8 on the differential. Minnesota United in second place with 4 wins, a draw, and no losses. They are still undefeated with 13 points with a +6 on the differential. Tampa Bay Rowdies in third place with 3 wins and 2 losses, 9 points, even on the differential. The New York Cosmos finally getting a win. They go up to fourth place. They are 2 wins, 2 draws, 2 losses with 8 points for a 6. Excuse me, a -1 on the differential. Looking at the wrong column. That's my fault. That's 8 points. And, of course, Fort Lauderdale in fifth place with 8 points as well. They're also 2 wins, 2 draws, 2 losses. They have a -3 on the differential, so that's why they're in fifth. Atlanta Silverbacks in sixth place with 7 points. 2 wins, a draw, and 2 losses. Only playing 5 games with a +1 on the differential. Indy 11 in seventh place with 7 points as well. They've played 6 games. 2 wins, a draw, and 3 losses with a -3 on the differential. Hawks right now in eighth place. 6 games played, 2 wins, 4 losses with 6 points on a -1 on the differential. FC Edmonton place, 1 win, 2 draws, 3 losses for 5 points, -1. 5, and, of course, in last place, FC Edmonton played no wins, a draw, 4 losses. They've scored 2, allowed 8, -6 on the differential. They have a single point. as we continue on here? As we go ahead now and take a look at the standings for the combined seasons. And as everyone knows, once again, Minnesota United will go to the playoffs, winning the spring. They are in first place right now, combined 33 points out of 14. San Antonio right now in second place, 32 points out of 15. The Cosmos in third place with 27 points out of 15 played. Fort Lauderdale in fourth place with 21 points out of 15 played. Carolina Railhawks in fifth place, 20 points out of 15 played. Tampa Bay Rowdies in sixth with 19 points, 14 matches played. Atlanta Silverbacks with 17 points in seventh place, 14 matches played. FC Edmonton in eighth place, 13 points out of 15 matches played. Ottawa Fury right now, 11 points out of 14 matches played. And of course, the Indy 11 is in last place. They've played one game more than Ottawa with 11 points, 15 matches played. So as of right now, San Antonio looking like they're going to lead the fall season. The Cosmos and the Strikers right now on the combined for the playoff bids, those two could be the wild cards. Still plenty of time, plenty of games left to go, and we'll see what happens. So we'll see what happens there. Let's get to the schedule now for the next round of games in the North American Soccer League. Four games on Saturday, August 16th, one game on Sunday, August 17th. Here we go. Carolina Railhawks hosting the FC Edmonton at Wake Med Soccer Park. That's at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Fort Lauderdale Strikers hosting the Atlanta Silverbacks at Lockhart Stadium. That's also at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Tampa Bay Rowdies hosting the New York Cosmos at Al Lang Stadium. That's also at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Start at 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central. The Minnesota United will be hosting the Indy 11 at the National Sports Center Stadium. And on Sunday, August the 17th, the Ottawa Fury will be hosting the San Antonio Scorpions at TD Place, and that will be at 3 o'clock Eastern Time. So some great matches so far in the NASL and the second division of American soccer. All your information of the NASL, hop on over to NASL.com, NASL.com. So that is the end of our first hour here on the 40 Cents Fire American Soccer Show. And, of course, that's national. Now we're going to go local with the New York Red Bulls. And first things first, I would just like to say that with Andy Roxburgh planning what he will do with the club when it comes to trades, that he's planning to make with this team. Obviously, Andre Akpan is on the trading block. Bobby Convey is also on the trading block. Very interesting stuff going on, as we'll see where or what's going to happen. A possible third designated player, depending on what happens at the end of the season with the roster, that Andy Roxburgh is going to bring over a designated player. And we'll see what happens, because I think that's the right way to go when it comes to bringing over new designated players. I'd rather they come in the middle, not in the middle of the season, during the summer window. I think the fall window or the winter window is the best time to bring over those players so they can have a full season under their belt and they can go ahead and get used to their new teammates, and they don't have to rush or anything because, they're just coming off of a break and, they have to get into a big race. And it's not like how it is in Europe and stuff, but still, I think that's the right way of go. Now, let me say this, and of course, I have to say that with Christian Dyer always on top of things, getting the information from the New York Red Bulls, and of course, everyone else, that's like, of course, Brian Lewis of the New York Post, Michael Lewis of Newsday, and Jack Bell of the New York Times, as well as Frank Giese from the New York Star-Ledger. You know, these guys, they do a great job. Other guys, too, of course, Graham Parker for The Guardian and for their U.S. sites and the U.S. papers here. in the United States. They all do a great job. Dan Dickinson from The Gothamist, as well as, of course, Dave Martinez when he does his Empire of Soccer. Let me just say that, though, that this original story was by Christian Dyer of Big Apple Soccer and Metro New York newspaper, that Andy Roxburgh was never, ever tempted to go after Ronaldinho. Now, let me just say this. Obviously, when you are during silly season, you try to take everything with a grain of salt. And, of course, you heard me discuss about the possibility of Ronaldinho coming to the New York Red Bulls. I tried to put a grain of salt on those articles as well when it came to him possibly coming over to Major League Soccer as well as coming over to the Red Bulls. Now, obviously, Berg has already said he's not coming here, and he's never coming here. And once again, that's from Christian Dyer, who had the article right away, had the news story right away, I should say. But still, when you're seeing photoshops of New York Red Bulls website with Ronaldinho already in a Red Bulls kit, you know it's a little bit on the edge of far-fetched. And while all I can say is that it would have been fantastic to have him here, I don't know if he has anything left in the tank that he can do anything here. If the one thing you might have to worry about Ronaldinho at the age that he is right now, that maybe football is not on his mind and the possible nightlife in New York City could be. We don't know what would have happened if he did come over. Obviously, it would have been fantastic to have his ability to create in the midfield and to have the two signings that I can remember by this club, either as the Metro Stars or as the New York Red Bulls, the two failed signings of DP players or those with a big name to make something big for them, Lothar Matthäus back in the, I think it was in the 98 season coming over, had a great start, but just didn't really care to be there. So I would say Lothar Matthäus would be the first poor signing of this club. And the second poor signing of this club, of course, as the Red Bulls, very simple, Rafa Márquez. It started off very well. You think to yourself that, he wanted to be here. It all started work. Everything was going well. It looked like that Rafa Márquez was flourishing. I mean, he had a great goal against Toronto FC on the road at BMO Field, that long-distance bomb that gave him the 3-4-1 victory for the Red Bulls when he came with Thierry Henry, and also Juan Pablo Angel was on the field with them. I thought it was an excellent signing at the time until, of course, he picked up some sort of an injury during the Gold Cup final back in 2011. And then after coming back from that, that's when he started to sour. That's when he started to act like he didn't care and he didn't want to be there. And if he really truly didn't want to be here in MLS and with the Red Bulls, then he should have just said to them, please release me from my contract. He didn't have to fulfill the whole thing. He could have just said, please release me from my contract so I can go somewhere else. And he went to Mexico. He did well with Club Leon. He admitted he shouldn't have come here in the first place. Well, look, if he didn't want to be here in the first place, then he shouldn't have come. Yeah, I want to be here, but I really don't want to be here. I just want to be here for what comes with the perks, not playing and trying to win a championship of any kind. And that's the one thing that I believe could derail of Ronaldinho coming over here. The talent is there. Yes, you have to give a try. But let's be honest. How much of a try would it have been? What if he's not playing to his potential? Would you still defend him? Would you still say, well, it's Mike Petke and how he's managing these players? And I'm thinking to myself, you know, there comes a time and a place where it's not the coach's fault. Saying, you know, well, he'll enjoy the iron bound. It's all Portuguese this, it's all Portuguese that. And the truth is, when does that crutch start to disappear? Because no matter how many times we say, oh, let's bring in a guy from Portugal, let's bring in a guy from Brazil because, you know, we have the iron bound and they're going to love it when these players come over. Look, they have their own favorite clubs in Portugal, and if they are from Brazil, they have their own favorite clubs in Brazil. They're never going to come here unless their kids tell them, Dad, come with us, Mom, come with us, come with us. Because the truth of the matter is this. As great of an area as the Ironbound is, and I'm very happy to see Mbelos, Katas, as well as El Pastore being the home of the three big supporters groups that we have in the South Ward. And I'm very, very happy, very, very happy that they have accepted those guys and allowed them to come in and to tailgate, to get ready before the game actually gets underway. I mean, I'm thankful for them, but the rest of the Ironbound, they're only going to concentrate on one thing, and that is the clubs that they support, that they can get on closed-circuit TV or on satellite television when it comes to their clubs. If that certain player did not play for their club, they're not going to come to Red Bull Arena. It's not a complaint or anything. It's just reality. It's just reality, all it is. So basically, you just have to say that don't expect them to come, because the idea right now is to, if you can get some Arsenal fans because they saw Thierry Henry play for Arsenal, then that's the fine thing. If you want to get some Everton fans to come over to watch the Red Bulls play because of Tim Cahill, that's fine too. Because in a certain way, it's all tribal. Whether you disagree or agree, it's all tribal. You're not going to get everyone to come to watch the Red Bulls play because it's not their club. Because these are the people that don't believe in, oh, I can have I can put this club in my heart because they don't play in this country, or they don't play in the country their team that they support, you know, full on. So all you can say is that it's just so much you can try and do, and it's not going to happen. So let's not try and force things down people's throats, because if they don't want to be a part of it, they're not going to be a part of it, and it makes no sense to alienate them anyway. If they want to come, let them come. If they don't want to come, they're not going to come, and it makes no sense to force them in the first place. That's it. That's all you can do. That's all you can say. And everything else that's a part of it, you can definitely say that it's a situation where it's just really been one of those things where, once again, it's silly season, but we really can't get overly worked up because of the silly season. So all I can say is this. Let them go. Leave them alone. It makes no sense. But once again, Ronaldinho is not coming here. You know what? I think it's just for the best that we don't worry about him. Andy Roxburgh does have a plan. Let's wait and see what his plans will be as we keep pushing on here. Of course, as everyone knows, there will be no match next weekend. Red Bulls will take a break. They're able to – I don't know if this was in the league schedule that they're going to give them a break this weekend, but they're having a break this weekend upcoming. And, of course, next weekend they'll be home against the Montreal Impact. And then they get ready for their CONCACAF Champions League group stage games. And, of course, end of August they'll be hosting midweek against Club Deportivo FAS. We will await and see which Fox channel they will be broadcasted on, so you can watch it if you're able to. So we will see what's going to happen. We'll see how they do in the International Champions Cup, the CONCACAF Champions League. We'll see what happens. So we'll see what happens then. I'm going to discuss now what basically should have been a scoreless draw in Chicago, because you have to wonder how MLS is finding ways to tell their referees to give them a penalty for their opponents. Now, if you saw what happened against Chicago, Quincy Ameriquois. Now, obviously, it was a tackle from the side, maybe a little behind, but it was definitely a tackle on the side. And it's a situation where Oyongo, now obviously he put himself in that situation technically because, yes, the referee blew the whistle for the penalty, but here's the thing. Here's the thing that really, really bothers me with these referees. What constitutes a penalty? In the area, Dongo tackled, did not touch Ameriquois, got the ball. But then here's Ameriquois standing there, grabbing supposedly tackled. He goes down and he grabs his left leg. And then for some reason, he snap backs like a backflip off a diving platform and goes for a splash. And if I'm seeing someone doing that, I would say, blow the whistle. I would never point to the spot. I would go to the player who does that little snap back dive backwards in the area, and I would book him for simulation, because to me, and what Charlie Davies did against the Red Bulls inside Red Bull Arena with the swan dive, which is a bookable offense in my opinion, and he earned his yellow card, Ameriquois should have been booked. He should have been booked for simulation, because that is not how a penalty should be called. He goes forward, reaching for his leg like he got shot, and then he just springboards and dives backwards in the area to make sure the referee blows his whistle for the penalty. And this is where I would like to see the assistant, depending on what side he's on the field, I'd like to see the assistant find a way to contact the referee and say to him, blow your whistle for a dive. It's not a penalty. And all you can say is great save on the spot kick by Robles. Unfortunately, the rebound went back to Mike McGee, who converted it to make it 1-0. The ninth penalty called. Mike Petke has said to the media twice after home games that Armando is being targeted by the league because of the way he's fouling. The second time he was told that Armando is being targeted by the league. The truth is that Red Bulls get called for all these fouls, even though Armando is not on the field against San Jose. So now the real question is this. Are the Red Bulls also targeted regardless, being in the area, fouls in the area, are they being targeted as well? The league is targeting the Red Bulls for almost anything and everything. You know, in my mind, that's a violation by the league. In my mind, the league should not have to pull these types of shenanigans to force the Red Bulls to calm down. They have every right to fight for 3 points, and they have every right to try to either get back and win the Supporters' Shield or to get into the playoffs and try to win the MLS Cup title, because they don't need to be targeted by the league because of whatever the league thinks they've done wrong. Do I know this for a fact? The league is targeting the Red Bulls? I do not. But it feels like it, doesn't it? I mean, let's go to the Red Bulls' schedule right now. Let's go to the Red Bulls' schedule, and let's take a look and see where they've been against for a penalty. Ah, yes, the opening match of the season. It was a 4-1 loss to Vancouver. The first goal of the match was a penalty awarded to the Whitecaps after Richard Eckersley was called for a handball. Now, the truth of the matter is I could not argue if it was or was not a handball, because once again I have said that the replay angles were very poor, and I could not distinctly say that truly is a penalty, that one is deserved. I could not say it, and I did not say it. The Red Bulls called for a penalty. And of course, let's not forget the Red Bulls lose that game 4-1. Of course, that's on March the 8th in BC Place. Home opener on March 15th at 4 o'clock. It was the Red Bulls with a 1-0 lead on a goal by Thierry Henry. And then all of a sudden, from the Rapids, it was an attacker going backwards into Jaime Olave inside the area. Olave did not attack him. Olave did not go after him. Olave stood there as the attacker went backwards, and when he felt Olave from behind, he fell down, and that was the cheap penalty as well. So at the moment, I will say 1 for the ref, 1 against the ref, and that was converted, and that ended in a 1-1 draw. Nothing against Chicago. The Eric Torres goal, which was also a penalty kick goal for Chivas USA. You know, that one I will give to the referees, even though, I mean, to me, on replay, I felt that Richard Eckersley, I wouldn't have blamed him for it, but then again, I could have seen why it was a penalty, so I'll give that one to the referee. So that's 1-4. That's 2-4 and 1 against. Philadelphia earned a penalty, and that was a well-deserved penalty for Philadelphia, because at the time the Red Bulls were up 2-0 on April 16th. It was an Ibrahim Sagaia dive, and he did extend his arm in the area, and that's a legitimate penalty call. So that's 3-4 and 1 against on the ref. Columbus, April 26th, I felt that was a dubious penalty. That didn't look like a penalty to me, so that's 3-4 and 2 against on the ref. Chicago, that was more of a free kick than it was a penalty, so that's not really a penalty. So that makes it that doesn't count. Trying to remember Toronto if that was a penalty kick. I don't think it was. But no, it wasn't a penalty kick, so nothing against Toronto on May 17th. Red Bulls got a penalty on May 24th, Sporting Kansas City 1-1, 2-2, no. Ah, yes, July 4th, with Red Bulls leading 2-1, and then the Chris Duvall call. That is a dubious one there, because Duvall did not handle it. It went off his shoulder, and Elfath is a poor referee anyway, so that's going to be now 3-4 and 3 against on the referees. And then, of course, the loss in Philadelphia on July 16th, where it was 2-0 and 2-1 Philadelphia, and Philadelphia getting a penalty of course, another poor referee in Baldomero Toledo, where both men were grabbing each other, yet it was the Alexander grab on Maurice Adu that gets called. So that's dubious as well. So that's now 3-4 and 4 against the referee. And then, of course, the penalty by Mike McGee, even though it was saved originally, and that's considered two saves out of nine. Still, though, it's a dubious call. Need, and I'm being serious when I say this, the referees need to be retaught the laws of the game. See, once again, it's about how you perceive what is and what's not a penalty. Because if you're going to get fouled like that, shouldn't you just go down like a ton of bricks? I mean, once again, what is a penalty and what is not a penalty? A penalty. Because of the swan dive by Charlie Davies. Quincy Americois, yes, there was a tackle. Yes, Oyongo was right on Americois. Did he truly foul him? No, he did not. And if he truly fouled him, wouldn't have Americois gone straight down? I mean, that's the big question. Wouldn't Americois gone straight down to the ground? Oyongo should never have done that type of a tackle. Yes, the penalty was truly awarded. But then you're seeing, grab the leg, oh, I'm hurt, snap your whole body backwards and do the backwards dive off the diving platform. And that's why I get frustrated with referees. I understand it's what he thinks it is, but it's not. And it's a terrible call. Going over Peter Walton's head, telling them, if the Red Bulls do commit a foul in the area, you must call it. It doesn't matter what, it doesn't matter how, it doesn't matter why. Because Mike Pecky's already complained about the league targeting Armando because of some of those nasty challenges. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not going to defend Armando. Armando, whatever bookings or sending offs or suspensions he's earned because of those terrible challenges, he deserved them. Without a question of a doubt, he has deserved them because he has played reckless, he has played terrible, and he deserves to basically get kicked out of the league. It's not going to happen unless the Red Bulls decide to terminate the contract. But if those situations continue on, and if those situations are still going to be continuing because maybe Garber wants to have a shiny new toy go out there and do much better, that's wrong. I'm not calling match fixing. That would be reckless. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that at all. What I am saying is that if Garber still continues to claim that the league is not playing favorites, then he should come out, come to Red Bull Arena, talk to the club, talk to the supporters, come out to Red Bull Arena and tell them himself, we apologize for what the referees have said and what they've called for. We apologize for that. But we have to say that what we are seeing is a very big rash of penalties being committed against your club. That's all he has to come out and say. Come out and tell the club themselves of what he's saying. It's really simple. Because we are seeing way too many penalties being created. Now, once again, eye is in the beauty of the beholder. at least I have admitted that some of the calls that the Red Bulls have gotten on for penalties have been deserved. Very, very true. The penalties that have been called have been deserved. Some of them have not. And I would like to get to the bottom of this if it's possible. I understand it happens real quickly. The referee has to make a decision. But that's why he has a fourth official, and that's why he has an assistant to say, that's not a penalty. Blow your whistle. That's a penalty. Pierre Walton, I believe, has done a fantastic job running pro, and he's doing a great job in trying to get our American referees to become solid and at the same time to get our referees from U.S. Soccer as well as Canadian Soccer Association on board and doing the jobs they're supposed to be doing. That's why I continue to say Mark Geiger is right now the best official, best man-in-the-middle official, the head referee on the field, doing a great job in calling games down the line, being fair. I continue to rave about Mark Geiger. I think he has done a wonderful job. I think he has been brilliant, and he deserves every single positive critique he gets because he follows the laws of the game properly. I have no complaints when Mark Geiger does a match. If there is a time like he'll make a bad call, I'll say it. But the truth is, Mark Geiger is right now the best American referee that MLS, U.S. Soccer, and any other league in this country has. Very, very true. I have no complaints. I think he does a fantastic job. And after all that, I am a little bit displeased with the Red Bulls in the second half because it looked like they gave up. Now, of course, many people complaining about some of the chances the Red Bulls were trying to take, and they said some of the fans are going, well, you know, they didn't have a lot of chances. No, they did. You just have to give credit to the center backs for Chicago, Bakari Soumare and Jeff Laurentiewicz. I mean, let's be honest here. If Bakari Soumare does not, in the first half, buy Bradley Wright Phillips, that's on frame. That's probably past Sean Johnson. Sean Johnson, for the first time in a long time, did not have to worry about anything. Sean Johnson had an easy night out there. The goal and the match was already decided on the penalty, which was saved originally by Luis Robles, but the rebound by the penalty kick taker, Mike McGee, he converted it. So once again, it's a situation where the Red Bulls were playing for the draw, or they were hoping that Bradley Wright Phillips would pound one past Sean Johnson. Unfortunately, the defense, the back line of Chicago, did a great job. That's all you can say, really. There's nothing more you can say. That was the best job of defense from Chicago out there. And unfortunately for the Red Bulls, they lose the series going no wins, a draw, and two losses. Ship didn't do much. Offensively, nothing happened for either side. That's all it is. All it is. Is it a shame? Yes. So all I can say is this. It's that a poor effort from the guys in the second half. I thought first half they did all right. The effort was there. They're trying to equalize. Didn't happen. But the second half was a very, very poor outing. And obviously, I don't think they've tuned out Petke. I just think they just gave up and decided, look, we got a break. Let's take it and let's go home. You don't want to say it, but that's what it looked like. You really don't want to say it, but that's what it looked like to me out there. And hopefully I'll be proven wrong. Hopefully I'll be proven wrong when they come back from their two-week break as they play the Montreal Impact at home on the 23rd of August at 7 o'clock Eastern Time, and that'll be on MSG. Now, the only thing we're waiting for is which Fox channel will have Red Bull games on, either Fox Sports 1, Fox Sports 2, or Fox Soccer Plus. So that's really the big question that's going to be next up. So we'll see what happens then. But as of right now, they're very inconsistent. You don't like to see all these inconsistencies. I know Tim Cahill, you know, played for Australia in the World Cup. He went and did the All-Star game. You know, he only had 45 minutes in him. I mean, he deserves a break. The real truth is that this team needs a break right now. It's a good thing it's come over. They need to reassess everything. Now, obviously, Olave finishing off his two-match suspension for the illegal grab on Omez Garcia. All I can say is that this break is finally coming in. It's finally coming in, and it, you know, let's be honest. A lot of soccer being played, and it's been deserved. This has really been one of those inconsistent seasons that we've seen so far that unfortunately pops up. But I am excited . So we'll see what happens. And of course, chat room right now, my friend here and New York FC fan asking me about Petke. He's wondering, if the Red Bulls don't make the playoffs, would you get rid of Petke and bring Bor Milutinovic back? Which I don't understand why he's thinking about Bor Milutinovic, because he's not in the picture. He's retired. Bor Milutinovic is not going to coach club football again. He's more of a national team coach. He's a better national team coach than a club coach, to be honest. But he's not coming back to MLS. He's not going to come back here at all. Petke right now, well, you know, there's been so much turnover with this club, with coaches. We have to give him an opportunity to right the ship for next year. He did great things last year. Yes, it's his rookie, it's his second season as a head coach. But I am not one of those people that are saying fire him now. He doesn't deserve it. He does not deserve to be fired. You have to give him an opportunity to go forward and to let him build this team the way it should be. Like I said before, last year, there's nothing you could have done. This year, yes, you can say something. But the truth is that Petke does not deserve to be fired. And let me ask you guys this as well. Why is it, because he hasn't had a coaching pedigree, but he brought us the first silverware of this club's history, and I don't care what anyone says. They won the regular season last year. We're in the CONCACAF Champions League. You're holding silverware. You're going to the CONCACAF Champions League. Hey, that counts. Tough. I'm not going to throw him away just for the heck of it. So all I can say is that So all I can say is this. Sooner or later, you know, you're just going to have trust in him and let him run this club the way it has to be run. why did Sir Alex Ferguson have all those great years of Manchester United? Because he was allowed the opportunity to take the time and build a, basically a historic run in the Premier League and in England. You know, it's funny because when I was told by several Manchester United fans who were visiting a couple years ago here in the States when they were just, you know, they had their Manchester United jerseys on, and I told them, look, you know, I have a Man United shirt as well with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer on the back with his name and number. But I asked them, did you ever believe in Sir Alex Ferguson when he took over as manager of Manchester United? And they all said no. No, we wanted him gone. We wanted someone with experience. But then all of a sudden, he became that manager. He became that big-time name that put Man United not just on the map in Europe, but in the world. And that's where Manchester United got all those Premier League titles. You know, they won two more UEFA Champions League titles. Also FA Cup titles, League Cup titles. Every time they're in the Charity Shield Championship, Sir Alex Ferguson won those as well. Basically did everything in his power to get Man United into winning ways. Since day one that Mike Pecky has been given the job, it's always been complain, 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 bitch, bitch, bitch. He's not the one, he's not the one, he's not the one, but he got this club its first title of any kind. Bob Bradley got the Metro Stars in the 2003 Open Cup and hosted it, lost to Chicago Fire 1-0. Juan Carlos Osorio in 2008 got the Red Bulls into the MLS Cup final, lost to the Columbus Crew 3-1. At the Home Depot Center, now the StubHub Center. Mike Pecky did what Bob Bradley could not do. He did what Juan Carlos Osorio could not do. A title that sent you to the CONCACAF Champions League. You want to call it a fluke? Go ahead, whatever you want to do it. I'm not in that discussion. All I'm telling you is that Mike Pecky deserves the same opportunity and the same amount of years to try and get it right. He did well last year. He's having his problems now in his sophomore season as a head coach. He deserves a third season, whether you like it or not. Mike Pecky deserves everything, just like Ben Olsen deserves as the head coach of DC United, because they had a coach who was with Kansas City a long time ago, and Ben Olsen was on his coaching staff as part of his assistants. And then when they fired the guy, they gave Ben Olsen the job. In 2010, he was an assistant. When the head coach back then got fired, he took over. 2011, 2012, 2013, and now 2014. So that's 4.5 seasons right now. Kurt Arnolfo was that head coach for DC United in the 2010 season. And then Arnolfo was sacked, and look at what happened, an Open Cup championship by DC United. So where was Ben Olsen's experience when he was hired on the 5th of January of 2010 for DC? Nowhere. August 5th, Anolfo was sacked of 2010. Here comes Ben Olsen, and look what he's done. So where is this same patience with Petke? Nowhere. You want him gone. It's all over. Goodbye. I mean, that's all it is, really. Why is it that DC United fans trust Ben Olsen, but for some certain reason, some of you guys are not trusting Mike Petke? We already knew that he only had enough of a coaching resume as an assistant to Hans Bakke after he retired from playing the game. 2011, 2012 are the only times he was an assistant coach for this team and then caretaker manager until he got the full reins at the start of last year. I am willing and I would rather have Mike Petke as the head coach of this team because he knows the area. He knows you guys. He knows how we talk and how we work and how we are passionate about the club. But I am not going to ask for his head. Then again, look what happened in Montreal. Nick DeSantis, who at the time player, head coach, sporting director, 20 full seasons with Montreal, and he stayed a lot longer than he should have. Now, I know he's been reassigned from within the club, but he's no longer going to be handling anything with player acquisition moves or strategy. Everyone up in Montreal wanted him gone. The owner didn't do it until finally they had no choice. Why are we all harassing? Why are we begging for Mike Petke to get fired? Look at Pablo Mastroeni. Now he's the latest guy to go in there. Same thing happened with Jason Christ before Jason Christ exploded for Real Salt Lake. Before he was a hot commodity to go to play for, or excuse me, to be the new head coach for New York City FC. Everyone laughed at Christ until he started to put everything together, and then they won an MLS Cup championship. Christ got all the time in the world. Every other coach that's been here has either only lasted one full season, three full seasons, or barely into a season. Everything has gone wrong. I mean, I'll be honest. I didn't know how Mike Petke was going to do it last year with everything that was going on. You know, they fired Hans Bakke. They decided not to keep him around. They went back to Sweden. Even you guys wanted Bakke gone, and he was an experienced coach. And now you're ready to jump off the ship and say, get Petke out of here. He doesn't know what he's doing. Maybe he does know what he's doing. Maybe it's not being executed. Maybe sometimes the players that they've been motivated, who knows, maybe they need to leave. Have they tuned him out? I don't think so. I just think for some strange reason, the guys just find a way when they get on the field and they're just probably blanking out. Who knows? But I really, truly believe that Mike Pecky is not the problem here. And how many times have we seen, you know, stability not staying proper after 1 year? So you know what? Stability is right here, right now. Stability maybe needs another season so that everyone can understand what's going to happen here. All I can say is this. I believe that Mike is going to do fine. I think he's going to do well. I'll be honest with you. I thought he was going to put the team into a playoff position. I never, ever thought it was going to be Supporters Shield territory, and he got it. That's all it is. But other than that, I believe in Mike Petke. I believe in him. They made the TIFO and the home opener for a reason. Because he brought a title. It's not the big title, but it is a title regardless, and I don't care what anyone says. And now he has an opportunity to coach for an International Cup title for the CONCACAF Champions League. Hopefully, they will try to find a way to make things work so that whoever they face, whether it's a Mexican side, a club side from Mexico, a club side from Central America, maybe an MLS side, we'll see how everything shakes out for this group stage edition. We need to see how everything is going to work out. And until that happens, Pecky deserves our support. Pecky deserves our support for this club and for him because he's earned it. And all I can say is that, you know, if you guys want to continue on hating him, fine, go ahead. I mean, I'm just telling you what I think. I think Pecky deserves at least 3 years, maybe even four. We'll see what happens. But let's be truthful about it. He did earn the first silverware of the club. So all I can say is that I'm going to be supporting Mike Pecky until the club says, or he says he's had enough, or if the club says that's it, we've had enough. Because I don't think it's fair. He's getting all this criticism, and all you do is yell, fire him now, because a result didn't go the way you wanted it to go. So that's it. I know it's been tough. It's been a strange week with a surprise victory down to 10 men against New England. Three players in the All-Star game, especially that great, you know, Bradley Wright Phillips. I know we didn't talk about him today, but still, though, you have to say that goal against Bayern Munich was unbelievable. That rip that he took was just unbelievable. I mean, great, great setup by both Bobby Boswell and Eric Torres on the flick header. Torres on the flick header right at BWP, settled it, and then got to it and then ripped it all in one motion past the keeper for Bayern Munich. You have to say that was perfectly placed. It was well done by Bradley Wright Phillips. And that rip got the phones ringing at Andy Roxburgh's desk and on his cell. Clubs want Bradley Wright Phillips because of that goal he scored in the All-Star game against the German Giants in Bayern Munich. Now, all I can say is that Andy, don't even sell him. Don't even attempt it. We need him here. He is burning up right now. He's on fire. On fire. And even though the goal count legitimately is on 18, 20 in all competitions right now, if you want to count the friendly against Arsenal and the All-Star game, Bradley Wright Phillips has been fantastic. I'm talking about a guy that's ready to go, that's ready to do some damage. It's a guy who looks like he's ready to get 20 goals. We'll see what happens against Montreal next week. But if he can get two on Saturday, the roof is coming down at Red Bull Arena. I mean, I've never seen a guy put on a clinic like he's done, probably since Juan Pablo Angel back in the 2007 season when he came over in his first year with MLS and the Red Bulls. Juan Pablo, I mean, if you go to YouTube and you type up, you know, Juan Pablo Angel goal accumulation or, you know, MLS goal career or something like that, the one time when there was a buzz in the crowd, the one time there was a buzz in the crowd, because that was a great ball. I remember Francis Doe headed it forward in front of Angel. And when Angel got to the ball, there was a buzz. It was a buzz, a big buzz. And then when he blasted it past Matt Rhys of the New England Revolution, the crowd roared. And you haven't heard a roar like that for a soccer goal that loud in a very, very long time. When the microphones are popping from the crowd, you know that's a hell of a goal. It was a great goal. It was achieved. And right now, Bradley Wright Phillips is one away from tying Juan Pablo Angel for the record for the club with most goals in the season. Well, I want to thank my guest. I want to thank Stephen Leonard for calling in, talking about the All-Star game in Portland. Of course, everything else going on with the Portland Timbers. And it was a very good evening, everyone. Thank my guests, of course, coming in on the chat room. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Join me this coming Friday, Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup semifinal review show. Thank you very much for listening. I appreciate it all the time. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. As always, please enjoy your football, enjoy your soccer. Thank you. Have a good night, everyone. Bye-bye for now, and I'll talk to you this Friday night, semifinal review of the 2014 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup.